Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Welcome to High Performance. In this episode, Owen shares his journey from a young boy playing basketball to realizing his dream of becoming a professional soccer player, influenced by his football family and the challenges of growing up with older brothers. Discover the pivotal moments and lessons that shaped his path to success. Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
Well, Owen, welcome to High Performance.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on the show. But so many young people grow up dreaming of being a professional soccer player. Why did you manage to turn that dream into a reality, do you think?
Do you know what? I never thought that would be a reality, not even for a second. I played more basketball than I did football as a kid. But because my dad was English, we played football, you know, and I was the youngest of three boys. So we didn't have a choice. You just did what your dad and your older brothers did. So my dad was quite good. You know, he was played semi-professional in Canada. And then, yeah, I was just always kind of pitch side, you know, and I think I was very lucky that I came from a football family. My dad could play. My older brother probably could have been a Premier League player from talent wise, but maybe lacked a few of the other attributes necessary. And I think I got to see that play against my older brothers. And as your older brothers do, they kind of kick the life out of you, don't they? And you have to learn to be tough and fight. And I just think that helped me, being in a football family, being the youngest, and also watching my brother maybe not do everything as he could have at best. So I think I was really lucky with kind of all those variables.
It's interesting, the lessons from your brother. What did he not do that you saw and thought, my story needs to look different?
Well, as you have two older brothers, you know, say it's normal. They have house parties, don't they? You know, parents would leave and then you'd have a house party and all their mates would be there. And, you know, they're just doing normal kid stuff. But I remember I was quite young in and around it. And obviously I would just have to be there because my parents were out. And I remember thinking, I didn't really understand it, why everybody was, you know, drinking and all that. And I think my brother probably should have made it. He bolted off from a contract when he went over on trial and they wanted to stay. My dad made him go back home, finish his last year of school, and then he ended up tearing his ACL. But I think at that time, he was kind of going up and his friends were really good players too. But because he was going up, they didn't want him to succeed. So they would start to go out and do stuff. And he, rather than say no, he kind of still did that. And then it's a very fine line, I think. And I kind of saw that and I thought, right. I remember my dad, when I was a young kid, I came home from school one day and he put an article on my bed, printed it out. And it was about Dennis Bergkamp kind of, you know, coming into Arsenal and kind of that whole culture. We were still kind of the English one with, you know, drinking and stuff, and about discipline and kind of living the right way and training and standards. And he said he used to smell kind of alcohol on people's breath still. And he would take it out of them in training, Dennis. And I just remember reading that and thinking, right, if you're going to do it properly. So I was probably fortunate that I had, my dad was kind of, he wouldn't do anything other than just leave it there, whether you read it or not. But
you did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I think that, again, I had never dreamed I'd be a, you know, football player ever. I went on trial at Bayern. I didn't even know who Bayern Munich was, you know, and I remember thinking I'm way out of my depth probably here, you know, Canadian kid. They all were asking me if I lived in an igloo, you know, when I got there.
Did they?
Yeah. They didn't know anything about a Canadian kid, did they? And they were all German national players. And I remember thinking, I'm probably in trouble here. And I remember the ball dropped. And after like 2 or 3 minutes, I thought, I think I'll be all right here. And I think I had probably had 4 or 5 of those moments in my whole career where I always thought, yeah, it's probably going to be too much for me, this. And once you overcome it, it's like, I wonder what else I could do. So I never I stopped making plans. I stopped making goals because I would kind of beat them quite quickly. And then I just thought, right, I tried to make it as hard as myself as I could to see if I could fail in a way. Because I started to learn that, you know, you can achieve a lot more than you probably ever imagine, and you got to back yourself.
As we reflect on the power of self-belief and pushing boundaries, Let's dive into the world of competitive sports and the unforgettable personalities that shape it.
I wasn't like, this wasn't a friendly for me. You know what I mean? Like if I was playing, I was all in.
And what was Mateus like?
Amazing. Amazing. Again, he's probably one of the most talented players, I think, ever. You know, played multiple positions, center mid, could do everything. But he was literally just leaving as I came in.
Right.
So you hear the stories from the guys. But Deus Effenberg, Oliver Kahn, I mean, you didn't mess about with Oli. At the time, he was probably best goalkeeper in the world. Well, he was. He got second in the Ballon d'Or to Ronaldo, didn't he, in 2002 when they lost in the final. And then even in training, like you know, everybody does like stuff, casual and shooting stuff. You didn't do that with Oli. Because if you say you try and chip him, he would come out and go mad. And he'd say, you're not going to do that in a game, are you? You don't have the courage to do that again, do you? So do it properly in training. You know, so that you had that every day, you know, whether it's Effenberg or, so you had to, we literally didn't, you didn't really take the piss.
What was Ottmar like as a manager?
Best. See, if I coach, I'd coach like him. No shouting, no yelling, just facts. And I think that's way more powerful than somebody shouting at me, telling me how useless you are. You know, I think people, especially young kids now, nobody wants to hear that anymore. But I think that's how it was, right? With teachers or authority or parents. And I think it's evolved now, whereas even with your kids, you know, you don't shout at your kids. You'd say, why don't you try this? Or why don't you try that? And I think it's so much more powerful. And I think Ottmar, because he used to be an ex-teacher, he was so calm in amongst, and you're right, we were called FC Hollywood because, I mean, we'd have fist fights in training because it was so competitive. And I think deep down, he probably really enjoyed that because it showed how much we cared.
Yeah.
But he kind of stayed out of it. And he was very level with us, treated us with respect. And he didn't shout or yell because in the end, we were handpicked by him. Do you know what I mean? So he knew who he picked and they were good lads. Okay, they were competitive and probably brutal at times. But we also had to figure it out ourselves. And I liked the fact that we had a leader that wasn't, Sven was the same, didn't shout and yell. I think that's better than somebody, you know, shouting at me. It doesn't work. After 4 or 5 times, you're like, oh, he's shouting again. Leave him.
And I know you weren't there for that Champions League final in 99.
I was in the stadium.
But you weren't in the team.
No. I was with the under 18s. We were going to a tournament in Rotterdam. I remember I was in the, up in the nosebleeds with the tracksuit on, and Bayern dominated, should have won.
Yep.
And I remember we all lost our voice because we were just shouting so much. And I remember we all sat there after the game, like the ending was just one of the craziest endings ever.
And as the excitement of that unforgettable match faded away, I found myself reflecting on the lessons learned and how they apply to the journey ahead.
So I just sat there with mom and dad real quiet, had a cup of tea. My dad probably knew what it meant. I didn't. But I was already focused on planning for next season. I didn't want them to think I was, you know, that was a lot for me.
Here's the truth, okay? High performers don't do more. They just work smarter. It's a myth I want to debunk that high performance means chasing hacks, squeezing it in, working harder than everybody else. It's not true. The best performers just simplify. They master the fundamentals. We call it world-class basics on high performance. And in many ways, I've learned this through trial and error, but also through the conversations that we've had on this show. And one area you need to get the basics right is your nutrition. And that's where Vitals comes in. This is nutrition without the noise. 2 capsules, 6 seconds, zero effort. And this has all the essential nutrients, vitamins, minerals, and healthy fats that you need, designed to power your sleep, your energy, your focus, your recovery. No mixing, no messing, no nonsense. Everything you need in the right dose. So why don't you strip your health routine back and just focus on what matters? Head to Heitch.com/Jake or enter the code HP20 at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Eventually, there was the change of manager at Raya Bayern. Felix Magath came in.
Yeah.
How much did that change life for you there?
A lot, probably. But again, I was more senior and I was more, you know, kind of comfortable in my own skin. And I think being a young kid, you My dad always told me, don't complain. Do you know what I mean? And don't be a baby. So I would never go up to the manager and say, why am I not playing? Or,
yeah.
And you just get your head down. And Otmar was a super respectful gentleman, a teacher, didn't shout, didn't yell. And I think, and we had this amazing team, but because we had a lot of success, and I think you see that with City probably this year, it gets to a point where it's hard to let people go because you've had success with them. So you don't want to let them down. So you keep them on maybe longer than you probably should. But father time is a real thing, you know? And in athletes, it's not, it's, everybody gets old, no matter how good you are. And we had a team where we, you know, we weren't playing at the level, but our minds all thought, or the guys thought they were. So they thought, let's get Maggot in because he makes everybody run in medicine balls and all that, which is, you know, going from one extreme, you know, calm and quiet to that. And yeah, that was something. I think everybody was quite shocked because we had only international players, you know, mostly world-class players.
As we reflect on the challenges faced by that team, it's clear that their journey led to remarkable successes.
I mean, that team was really successful. We won 2 doubles, you know.
Yep.
But I think it's not sustainable over a long period because it's just too stressful.
Mm. But I love that advice that your dad gave you about don't complain. How did that serve you well?
Well, it probably, I think it did in a lot of ways, but it probably didn't, like when I got my injury with my tendon, like, so my first year at United, I had this tendon injury, but because I was such a, you know, in all the testing, sprints and endurance, I was probably always the best. So, and I always, what I didn't realize was my mind was a lot stronger than my body. And because I was, you know, coming into a new team, I didn't want to miss time. And I didn't want to think I was cutting corners. So, you know, I just kind of played through it. And so I think to answer your question, it's a really good thing to have that. But actually, when I had the issue that I had, I probably should have said something and, you know, but I didn't go to him and say, boss, I got this thing that's bugging me, or this injury and I can't play, or I'm taking painkillers to be available for you. Only when it got to the point that it was so extreme that they said, look, you know, you might not ever play again. Even then, I don't think I went to him. And so it probably would have benefited me in that moment to maybe say something. But I think in general, I think it's a nice thing to say, just get your head done, just chip away, just work every day. I think it's a really powerful thing because I think you benefit from that. And I think making excuses, we can all make excuses, but I'm not a fan of that. You know, you're in charge of your destiny. Obviously, we need a bit of luck too, but just work and see where the chips fall. Do you know what I mean? Because
yeah.
Nobody really knows, like every football game is different. You know, the opposition, the referee, your teammates, the weather, nobody knows. And all the managers with these tactics, nobody knows. But in the end, just compete. And see what happens and see where the chips fall. And I think when you have enough guys that can help you win, say 7 or 8, that think like that, you'll win.
And as we shift gears to a different yet equally intriguing aspect of the game, let's dive into the moments that define a player's journey off the field.
You got booed by the journalist.
Yeah. So Adrian facilitated this. We were staying in the Lowry. And so we had to sit down with all the Sunday papers. There was like the 8 or 10 biggest guys. Me and Adrian. So they all basically in front of me going, like, what are you doing here? Basically, what are you in this world for? So I said to them, I mean, bear in mind, this is before the tournament. And I remember thinking, I couldn't say anything, right? Because, you know, I didn't, again, my dad told me not to complain. But I thought, am I going to sort this out? So I remember saying to them, guys, look, with the utmost respect to you and your job, if you guys would have watched me play the other day in the cup final, I'm pretty sure you wouldn't come to the conclusion you did. But the problem is you watch the Premier League and you don't watch where I play. And I think if you guys just took a little bit of time and watched me play, you wouldn't. And so as we walked out, so basically I just didn't call them out very respectfully, but I said, I don't agree with anything any of you guys got to say. So played a tournament. And so I ended up working my way into the starting 11 because Fenn, I think he knew, basically all it comes down to in football and management is, are you going to be there for me when I need you? That's all it is.
Mm.
And Sven knew, Sven knew I'd be there for him when he needed me. That's all management is. And he had this like plan, I think, to get me in. I didn't think I was going to play that much, but I think he knew deep down I could give the team something that maybe others couldn't. And so I would, and I knew I was getting criticism, but I didn't turn on my telly, no laptop for a month. I used to go, I'd train in the morning, I'd eat, I'd go into my room, and I'd listen to you, I'd just focus, nothing, no outside distractions, I didn't watch any telly, no news. I'd do sit-ups, push-ups, stretch, play. And by the end of the tournament...
Was no one telling you, though, these things are being said? Were the lads not talking about it in the dressing room? Or you must have been aware.
Yeah, but you take on what you want to take on.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't realize my probably best skill was to compete. So that was as hard as I was going to get it. So I remember I would just go into a room, focus, control what you can control. You know, I controlled what I did in my room, where I trained. And I knew, because I was a good athlete and, fitness-wise, I was probably better than even them. Because I remember when I first came into the England squad, I remember Sven pulled me into one of the hotel rooms after training. Back in the day, it was only those polar belts. You remember the heart rate monitors, that most basic thing ever. And I remember we'd hand it in. And he said to me, "Oh, come here." He went, "Oh, and look at this." And I said, "Well, what is it?" And it was just connected to this laptop. And he said, "Look how fit you are." And I said, "Yeah, well, I'm a wall fit, Sven." He said, "Yeah, but Owen, you're fitter than everybody else. These are the best of the best." He said, "Look how quick, when your heart rate goes, look how quick it comes back down." And I didn't know that. I just played on instinct, right? So once people started to tell me, "Oh, you're the quickest, we do the sprint test," I'd win. And endurance-wise, so when I went into a game, even though I was tired, I knew I could push myself more than anybody else. So that's why by the end of that tournament, I remember when we lost to Portugal, and I walked through the mix zone, and all those guys that asked me why I was there gave me a clap as I walked through. And again, I didn't say anything, like, "Oh, I told you."
Yeah.
But they knew they were wrong. And again, that's fine. I'm not out here to, you know, to make people look bad, but I just think you should be, if you're going to have a strong opinion on something, make sure you're researched.
Mm.
And when you went into that England squad, you just said culture was really important. We've spoken to Rio Ferdinand, Peter Crouch, Joe Cole, that were all members of that squad at the time, that spoke about the cliques, the divisions, the club rivalries from the Premier League that had manifested themselves. How did you find a way of fitting in there?
I didn't try and fit in, you know, I was just myself. I was like Switzerland. I was just independent, you know, so I could drift in and out of everyone's because I wasn't affiliated with anyone.
Right.
And I think everybody probably quite saw that as well. Like, I'd be with the young guys initially. And I think that's probably how it came about that Man United signed me. I think it was the United boy said, "Sir Alex, go get him." Because they saw how you trained every day. You know, you had to be a pro, you had to be resilient. But I knew I was an outsider within the group, but I was cool with that because, you know, I'd not been an outsider as such, but I'd leaving home and moving to Munich and, you know, and all that, I had to adapt. And again, not make it hard on myself, but I do think you learn a lot when you leave your comfort zone.
And as we reflect on those challenges and the growth that comes from stepping outside our comfort zones, let's dive into the mental aspects of the game, particularly the moments that test our composure.
Right? So there's a lot of time to think. And I think if that thought process, you know how long that walk is from your team to the penalty spot? It's long. Because you can't run because you look nervous. Can't go too slow, you look nervous. Do you know what I mean? So you got a lot of time to like process and think. And that's why it's really important that you think positively, constructively. And then I think if you do that, you give yourself belief or in confidence. You can still miss, but I think the process is much different, is much better if you think positively rather than think of the consequences or the pressure.
And on a personal level, you went from being booed by journalists when your name was called out at the press conferences to clapped by them as you left the stadium in the final game. You went from being booed by the England fans when you came on against Paraguay to being voted player of the tournament at the end of the tournament. Did you take a moment then to stop and think, okay, it might not have been what it could have been for England, but for me personally, that was a great tournament?
No, I was already on to the next one. I didn't realize to that extent because I used to switch it off. I didn't take no notice. That's why it amazes me that all these athletes listen to all social media and what all everybody says. You know, why would you listen to what they're not there with you guys in the dressing room? Focus on what you can control. Block out all the noise, all the opinions. They don't matter. It doesn't matter your teammates or your coaches. So my brother and my family used to sit up in the crowd and you imagine sitting, your brother sitting next to people booing you. My brother's thinking, I'm going to have loads of people close to me saying they almost had fights.
I was going to ask, how did they cope?
They found it really hard.
Yeah.
But again, they, you know, we didn't really talk about it either, but they probably knew I was the little butt. They probably knew, don't make him mad. Do you know, because, you know, I was competitive, yeah. You know, and I, as I got older, I realized I was good in those moments. As hard as it was probably, you know, for me to learn that, I could fight against it. But I think it probably was really hard for them. You know, I remember Frank Lampard. I never said this to him. I should have actually. Because Frank got it from the England fans. And I remember families are all really close. You know, all the players are locked away, but all the families are together all the time for a month. And Frank's mom came over to my mouth. I got booed, I think, and said, oh, don't worry, Frank got it too. You know, we're kind of there for you. You know, and what an amazing thing to say from a mother to a mother. So I think those things are, you know, quite comforting, I think, for families because you're, I think everybody means well, but there is a lot of pressure on everybody to like jostling maybe for position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Within the camp, we're all locked away. But it's also difficult for the families being away for a month and watching the family through the ups and downs because there's so many.
But for your parents as well, I'm wondering about what it must have been like for them that they're from Wales and England, but then they've emigrated to Canada and then their son comes back to do it and he's being disrespected or abused for it. Like, I suppose I'm interested in just how they perceived it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it was probably really hard. I can only imagine now as a father how frustrating I would find that. But you know what? I think they probably knew I wasn't going to go down quietly. I could have failed easily. Fine. You know, I still would have achieved far more than I would have ever dreamed. But if I was going to go down, I was going to go down swinging. And that they probably knew that about me because, again, I was the youngest. I had to learn to fight for everything, which, and I think is really good. So, you know, we never really spoke about it, but I'm sure it was really hard for your kid, you know, to go through that. But in the end, I think as much as I had talent to play sport, I had a talent to, you know, kind of hang in there when it was hard and actually not do less, do more and push. And it's such a powerful feeling when you go beyond of what you think you can, do and actually outperform people that are, I know you're more talented than me and I outplay you. Do you know how powerful that is? Like within a game, and when you know you're better than me and I outplay you, that's competition. And I think when people know that about you, then you become a problem because it's not just about talent. And again, sport, I don't care what sport you play, it's not just about talent. Can you hang in there when it's hard? Can you push yourself beyond what you can, because I promise you, everybody's tired, but just do more. Just see what it, if you're tired, you know, we'll take you off. If you don't play well, we'll take you off, but do as much as you can to see where the chips fall. And I think for me, I always just, my dad used to say to me, I don't care how you play. I don't care if you win, just give me what you got. And that's how I played all the time. Right. I just give it what I got. And I was so lucky that it took me as far as it did because I didn't think I'd ever get there.
You know, you said it a few times in your career, you had these moments where you thought, oh, I don't actually belong here.
Loads of them.
Just take us into that England dressing room around the time of 2006 under Sven, whether you had that sense of, I need to prove myself all over again here with the greatest players in England.
No, I did. Yeah, of course I had to. But I wasn't going to do that by talking. I was a Canadian kid who played in Germany. What am I going to say? Everyone was probably looking over thinking, you know, what's he doing here? But you know what? I had to just, again, chip away. And again, the guys are all, we're all the same guy, wherever we're from, whatever color, race, religion you are. We all left home on our own to go play football and make a job of it. And then if you play for a Bayern Munich or Man United or Arsenal, Chelsea or Liverpool, and then you end up playing for England, we're all pretty much the same guy in a lot of ways. And you can see that in each other.
And as we reflect on those shared experiences, it's interesting to hear how newcomers navigate their own journeys in the game.
Obviously, I'm new, right? So I'm thinking, right, gotta let people know. And then when I was going, oh, and it's not like that yet, you know, like, Gaffer just picks a team. If you're good enough, you'll play. You don't gotta, like, show anyone. But he did it in such a brilliant way. And I thought it was really cool how the way he said it, because he could tell, like, I wanted to make an impression. Not in a bad way, but I cared. And it was really important. I learned a lot from kind of that moment. It's like, you know, don't get after your teammates in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But that was the culture of Munich. It was like, we were after each other. You know, we played like Germans against foreigners or young v old, or, and it, you know, be starting 11 against the subs, and everything was just like, you know.
So Scholes was looking out for you rather than...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. He meant it in a good way.
Right.
But I think he could tell the culture I had before was maybe slightly different. And that's probably why we were successful, because we had that. But at United, we probably had maybe a little bit more... He could see... He was trying to help me, which was good.
I remember saying to Rio Ferdinand early on, when I worked with him back at BT, I said, what did Tralick say to create the culture at Man United? And he said, oh, the boss said nothing because the players created the culture.
But again, he handpicked everybody, Jay. So he knew, again, goes back to, you know, the guys only play, I think, because are you going to be there for me when I need you? Right? And if you're the boss and you pick me, you've handpicked me. You know I'll be there for you. And Sarac's only had guys, I think, that were there for him.
Yeah.
And that's why, whether even it was like, you know, a John O'Shea or a Wes Brown, Ji-Sung Park, even the guys that didn't play all the games, when they played, they were there for him. And so but then you have Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez, Giggs. I mean, we had probably 10 guys that were captain of the country. So we had this culture. Obviously, Sir Alex was at the top and David Gill. All those guys in there, you could count on. And I think that's all. And the more of those you get, the more chance you can win. And it's not a coincidence. And I think no wonder, it's not a coincidence that Man United have struggled since. It's because they lost 10 captains of the country and they bought loads of players, spent a lot of money. But football is only, are you going to be there when I need you? When the chips are down. Because when you're winning and it's easy, it's easy. It's easy for everyone. But football is about, can you be there when it's hard? You know, can you compete when it's at its most difficult? And we had guys that were good when it was difficult because Sir Alex handpicked everyone. And I think that was... And when we got into difficult moments, we'd be there for each other, as different as we were.
Can you give us an example of a difficult moment where that manifested itself?
You had them all the time. I think because the culture was so good, and we weren't always like critiquing, analyze everything. Okay, once in a while you'd have a little blip and you'd lose, but you'd probably only lose, what, 4 or 5 games back then with those teams.
As we reflect on those shared experiences and the lessons learned from our challenges, let's shift our focus to a different aspect of the game that often goes unnoticed.
Go back to the England thing. I can hit a Hollywood pass, but it's probably not the right thing for the team. That would be more about my ego.
Right?
Can I hit a home run? And I think at the top, I think, okay, that's option A. That's the pass I want to hit, but that could get picked off and that's a counterattack. At the top level, the games are decided by that transition. So I got to think, okay, that's not a good one. I'll take B, you know, and then we go. If you can and it's worth the risk, go for it. So I think all the top players play like that. They think, you know, hope for the best, but plan for the worst, I think. And I remember we played Tottenham away and I think Scholesy squared it to me. And it wasn't a great ball. And it wasn't one of them. If I dribbled, it was a bad idea. But it came to me beautifully. So I hit it, right? Edge of the box. Shoot. If it goes over, goal kick, right? Not a big deal. Takes a mad ricochet, bounces off somebody, end up getting a counter, almost score. Didn't score. But I think he thought, don't like that. And probably in a way, sending me a message. And I remember being in the dressing room thinking, and I had never, because when he signed me, he was calling me all the time, messaging me. I felt like we were mates, you know what I mean? And not mates, but, you know, he was very close because I was trying to get you to come. And I remember thinking, I should have a chat to him about it. You know, like, why'd you take me off? But I realized quite quickly that, you know, that wasn't my place. Because I remember the first time I ever did, I knocked on his door asking why I wasn't playing. And I forget the look he gave me. And I thought, probably shouldn't have knocked on the door. But you don't know that, right? Because you got this, oh, communication, everything's cool. And again, he created this, he was the boss. Everybody called him the boss. I remember my first game for Man United was such a powerful thing. Playing City away when they weren't the City. And we didn't start the season great. I didn't, because of my tendonitis, I didn't start the first few games. And I played in the midfield, Scholes and Carrick. And Giovanni scored against the run of play, but we played really well. Anyway, halftime, and I'm walking off and said, we're going to the tunnel over there. And Rio's behind me, centre back. And I'm walking up. And Rio's like, Owen. Bear in mind, Rio's like 27 years old at the time. You know, London boy, quite lively. And he's like, Owen. I'm walking up. He's like, Owen, get in the dressing room quick. Gaffer's going to go mad. And I'm thinking, why? It's half time. I'll just run around. I'm walking into the dressing room. He said, get in the dressing room quick. All right. So even Rio, you know, as he was and the experience that he had and how he grew up, he was respectful of the boss's reaction because he didn't know. And I thought that was very telling of kind of the culture. Was like, it was demanding and rightly so. And I remember
Sir Alex didn't want to see you walking, basically.
Rio was just fearful of what he was going to say because we're probably going to get it, right? And he wanted to be in there quick because if you last, he'd like, you know, that probably would.
So you don't run. You don't walk, you run.
I don't know. I did never asked him. He was just... Rio was respectful of the boss's reaction, whatever it was going to be. So we get in, we sit down, halftime, and boss out, I don't know how we're losing. You're by far the best team. Keep playing, you'll win the game. But the fact that Rio even thought that, I thought was very powerful. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to the culture.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website, www.podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.